Hello, I'm Matt Harmon, and welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast presented by Planter, satisfying your snack cravings for over 100 years. Dalton Del Don joining me today. I don't know why I say joining with me today. That doesn't make any sense. Dalton Del Don joining me today. Dalton, do you know what satisfied me today?
What's up? What is that, Harmon?
Well, what's not satisfying me right now is that allergies are absolutely kicking my butt over here. And, you know, humble brag, actually, I'm going to have two humble brags within this complaint, which is actually part of what satisfied me. Because the ceilings in our house here are so high. This house collects a lot of, collects a lot of dust, which then just destroys me allergy wise. But what really satisfied me, again, humble brag, I'm engaged to a beautiful woman who is very smart. She knows all of these things, and we're just the most inferior species here, us male humans. We don't know anything. We don't know how to take care of ourselves. We're a mess. She just, is constantly telling me things like, hey, if your nose is stuffed up, take a warm towel, put some essential oils on it, and cover your face for 5 minutes. And I'm like, I'm not doing that. That's stupid. No way. And then I do it. I'm like, wow, that really actually made me feel a lot better. So shout out to women, basically, is what satisfied me today.
For sure. I like that. I know local honey can help with allergies too, but maybe that may be more of if trees are shaking, if you're around agriculture areas. But local honey is supposedly a good remedy for airborne allergies as well.
I feel like that's a good call for you and Josh Allen up there in California, farm town.
Exactly right, man.
I love that that's become a thing now. That's something that announcers talk about in Bills games and everything like that. But Dalton Del Don, Yahoo Zone, was on that one first. So that is a big shout out to you. All right, Dalton. Let's jump into the meat of the show here. We do it every Tuesday, the trends that you love to see and the trends that you hate to see. But before we kind of get into that, we actually have two pretty significant pieces of news here to discuss. And I mean, significant is kind of a sliding scale with this first one. Dez Bryant, he of Cowboys fame previously, he has not played an NFL game since December 31st, 2017. We are coming up on almost a three-year absence for Dez Bryant in the NFL. But despite all that, the Baltimore Ravens have signed him to their practice squad. Yahoo users were up in arms about the fact that he wasn't available in the player pool, which is an interesting thing to be bothered by, if you ask my opinion. But he is back in the game, and he's back in the NFL. Dalton, any reaction to this one at all?
Yes, the reaction was surprising. I heard it myself. Why is Dez Bryant not in the player pool? We got that taken care of, and I don't know. This is a nothing burger for me. I mean, Mark Andrews only has 20 catches. Marquise Brown, I think, is going to get going, but this is not a high-volume pass offense. Dez Bryant's coming off a torn Achilles. I know he's younger than you think, but yes, man, playing wise, he hasn't made an impact for a couple years now. To ask him to come in the middle of a season and go to this situation, I would be shocked if he, maybe a 20 team league, I'm in one of those or something. But no, I mean, I'm not rushing to get Dez Bryant. I mean, in a 12 teamer right now, am I off base here?
No, I don't think you're off base at all. I don't really think he's worth putting on fantasy rosters at the moment, because number one, he's not even on the Ravens active roster. He's on their practice squad. Josh McCown, by the way, is on the Eagles practice squad. You wouldn't know it because he's just hanging out in his house in Texas doing Zoom meetings with the team. But that's essentially what practice squad means here in the year 2020. Now, with that being said, the signing at least piques my interest a little bit. Number one, because obviously the Ravens were one of the teams that were thinking about, they were kind of on the outskirts of the Antonio Brown conversation because Marquise Brown is Antonio Brown's cousin. Lamar Jackson and Marquise and Antonio all worked out together in this offseason. So there was that. They clearly want to add some juice to their receiver room. Their passing offense right now, it's I don't know if it's sneaky or I don't know if it's quiet anymore. I feel like enough people are talking about it, but it's not been a very good unit at all. They're 21st right now in pass offense DVOA. They're still fifth in rushing offense DVOA, despite the fact that none of their backs are like usable in fantasy because it's just such a committee. Lamar Jackson right now, like if you paid up for Lamar Jackson in August drafts, you hate yourself because he's QB 15 on the season. He's passed for more than 210 yards just once, Dalton, and that was their season opener, which feels like 1,000 years ago. So the pass offense clearly needs some help. Dez, like I said, it's been 3 years since we've seen Dez in an NFL game. And last we saw him, he was not good at all. In reception perception that 2017 season, he finished below the 10th percentile in success rate versus man and press coverage, which is surprising because, you know, he's like a freak athlete, obviously. That was how he used to get separation. I've always made the Dez Bryant, DK Metcalf sort of comparison there. But could 3 years away from the game maybe be good for him if he ever does get to the active roster? Perhaps. He definitely can't play like an outside X receiver role, but I think they could use a player like Dez Bryant from a theoretical perspective, a guy that could be, you know, an Anquan Boldin-esque chain mover. I think that's sort of the role that Dez would have to play. But again, it's a total unknown to me now. And I mean, even when he does hit the field, I think it will be a total unknown then too.
I like your point about Lamar Jackson. I know you're happy if you drafted Kyler Murray or Russell Wilson, but this is another piece of evidence to avoid quarterbacks early in 1QB leagues. It's tough to predict which one. I mean, Patrick Mahomes has been a disappointment too. And so he and Lamar Jackson just not quite living up to their ADP. Man, there was some concern in the offseason. The tape would be on Lamar. The defense is going to be different. What's going to happen? Week one, 11.0 YPA, 3 touchdowns. It looked like, oh, the opposite happened. He got better. So the league is put on notice. And then, you know, ever since then, you mentioned, the yardage and the fantasy production or the real life production has not quite been there. Maybe they take this bye week and they come out, you know, they fix it. But I know left tackle Ronnie Staley was banged up. And right now they are a question mark. Like, I'm taking the points and the Steelers this week because right now I'm in prove it mode for this Ravens pass offense. I mean, Marquise Brown is way up there in all the air yard stuff, and he could go crazy in the second half. But again, I'm more in prove it mode now. And I think this is a passing offense that is struggling. And Dez Bryant's not going to be the answer to suddenly fix it. Maybe in real life and in the postseason, he can catch some touchdowns and be the chain mover, as you're saying. But fantasy impact, I would be surprised. But then again, I said Carmelo Anthony was done, and he ended up helping NBA a little bit. But this would be shocking at this point of the year. Man, there are way better ways to use your roster, your bench spots, in my opinion.
Yeah, again, wait till he even just gets on the active roster before you want to put him on your fantasy roster. Like, that would be step would be step one. That's like the first bar we need to clear. And I actually kind of have a lot more thoughts on the Ravens and like why their offense might be slowing, but I want to save that discussion for the Chiefs, since you brought them up, and we're going to talk about them and trends that you hate to see. So I'll save that point for now. But the second piece of sort of news today is that Christian McCaffrey designated to return from injured reserve. Very dramatic return, apparently, according to The Athletic's Joe Person. He came onto the field in one of those red, you know, injured jerseys, shed that, and then threw on a regular jersey. Very much like, oh, is that Christian McCaffrey's music type of moment for CMC there. But he's back. Theoretically, he could. We don't know yet if he's going to play on Thursday night. Panthers play the Falcons on Thursday night. It would be a great spot for him to return. Obviously, it's a short week for them. How do you project this backfield now with McCaffrey back? Because Matt Rhule has even said himself, like, he doesn't see Mike Davis, you know, going away. He said he's still going to play even when McCaffrey is back. But what do you think that split looks like?
That was unclear to me at first. I'm like, was he wearing the non-contact jersey or not? So I'm glad that you filled in the details there. If he's active, what I would treat both of them as startable. Certainly McCaffrey, obviously, you're playing. But yes. I think Mike Davis will be involved enough. And if you look at trying to rank running backs, it's ugly from 25 on. So especially because of the targets he gets and McCaffrey coming back and obviously from such a semi-serious injury and the good matchup too at home against Falcons. So I would play both for sure. I would definitely be using Mike Davis as a flex type starter, even if CMC is active, at least this week.
Yeah, this week, I mean, this is a good spot for you to, if you have either Davis or McCaffrey, if you have both, it's sort of, you're sort of in a bind there. But like, if you have Davis, I think you can feel pretty good that if both of these guys are active because of the matchup that they're in, like, this is a perfect spot for you. It probably couldn't have gone any better than that, because you can just throw these guys out there no matter what. Now, it's worth noting that, like, over the last 2 weeks, the matchups have been a little bit more tough. Obviously, the Bears have a very good defense, and the Saints are very underrated as a rush defense. But Mike Davis has definitely started to slow down that pace that he maintained against the Chargers, the Cardinals, and these Atlanta Falcons. Caught 2 passes against the Bears, caught 5 passes against the Saints, which sort of buoyed his fantasy floor, and then scored a rushing touchdown against the Bears the previous week, which buoyed that floor. But 2.9 yards per carry against the Bears, 1.7 yards per carry against the Saints, just 7 carries on the ground in general. I think this offense, like, it's worth discussing this potential split. I do think that it will go back to sort of being an 80-20 sort of situation. Like, they're going to spell McCaffrey with Mike Davis. Yeah. But even that is a big difference than how we've seen McCaffrey used in previous years. Like, the last 2 seasons, especially in 2019, McCaffrey was, like, basically a 99% snap player. Like, even when they had CJ Anderson on the roster in 2018, that Norv Turner coaching staff was pretty much like, forget it. We're going to just throw this guy out there on every single possible play. So that alone, like, even Davis taking 20% of the touches, and, you know, this is just pulling numbers out of thin air, like, that would be a big difference to the point that McCaffrey might be, when he comes back, you know, the 7th, the 6th, best running back in fantasy, which is great, but it might be a little bit less of an impact, especially coming off an injury, the first probably real big serious injury of his career. It could force him, like I said, down to that 6th, 7th running back in fantasy, and not like the clear-cut number 1 overall pick that he was coming into this year.
Yeah, it was really nice when he was getting nearly 100% of the snaps, no doubt. But it will probably take away 15 to 20% with the way Mike Davis has shown. One thing I will note is Atlanta has been this, like, pass funnel defense, ranking 31st in DVOA against the pass and just 7th against the run. So they haven't been horrible, but obviously a home game over under near 50 should get some goal line scores. And I do like the setup here for Carolina either way. But I think CMC is still moving forward after this week, and then he'll have 10 days to recover. Maybe he's not the clear-cut number 1, but, man, you look at the running back landscape with what is Kamara doing and Elliott. Who's the argument? Aaron Jones coming off the injury, right? Dalvin Cook coming off the injury. I don't know. Derrick Henry, obviously, in non-PPR, but I don't know. McCaffrey will be right there in the mix for number 1, even if he's playing 80% of the snaps instead of 99%.
Yeah, you're probably right. And the good news is this Panthers offense overall has been really, really efficient, very functional. I think that they've been a big upgrade over what we thought this offense was probably heading into the year, which is good news overall. For it's a reason that Mike Davis has been in our lives as, like, a top 10 fantasy back the past couple of years, or the past couple of weeks, excuse me. Let's move on to sort of a mix of, you know, an interesting trend to discuss, and also another news item, a couple of news items here. Chris Godwin fractured his index finger. Apparently it was on that touchdown catch against the Raiders last week. I feel so bad for Chris Godwin, man. Like, it's been one thing after another, you know, a super durable player overall, but it's just one of those, like, bad luck injury years for him. And frankly, it's been a bit of a bad luck injury situation for all of the Bucs receivers. Scotty Miller's been hurt. Mike Evans has apparently been playing through an injury. That's a reason why they signed Antonio Brown. According to Bruce Arians, that was a big reason that he said that they decided to make this move. Sure, whatever, Bruce. I don't know. But this is an interesting note with this Bucs receiver core. According to my buddy JJ Zacharyson from Number Fire and FanDuel, Mike Evans, without Chris Godwin this year, 21.2 PPR points per game, 22.8% target share per game. Mike Evans with Chris Godwin this year, 7.3 PPR points per game and an 8.8% target share per game. That's a huge difference, right? That's you could argue sample size, whatever, but I think intuitively it makes a lot of sense. Brady and Godwin were seemingly, from that week 1 game and the offseason reports, much more in sync with each other right away than Evans and Godwin, or Evans and Brady were. So I think it makes a lot of sense why Evans would be much more boosted in the games when Godwin was out. I mean, also, it just makes sense, right? Like, these are your two best players. When one of them gets removed, obviously the targets are going to funnel to the other. How are we feeling about, though, if Evans plays a couple of games without Chris Godwin? Because people are, like, ready to drop Mike Evans. You know, he's consistently dropping, like, 2 points or, like, two catches per game or whatever in your lineup. It's not great. It's not been fun. I also think this Bucs team is just at a really fascinating point in their season because I think they might be the best team in the NFL, or at least the most balanced team in the NFL. You know, they run the ball well, they throw the ball well, they're a great defense. Where are we at with this passing game right now with this latest news that obviously Brown is joining in a couple of weeks and Chris Godwin is once again out?
I've been having Evans lower than the consensus rankings the last couple of weeks, but because I just think he's totally banged up. I don't care what they list him as. He's far from 100% with the ankle or whatever. It's hobbling him, but I had to move him up with no Godwin. I mean, maybe it just might come in the red zone and he may not get some big downfield plays like we're accustomed to, but without Godwin, especially it's the Giants who've defended the run far better than the pass, he's definitely back to top 20. But Gronk is there too, though. So, and Scotty Miller is coming alive too. So there's some options there, but yes, definitely boosts the value for Mike Evans. A very frustrating year for Chris Godwin, big time. And yeah, I mean, Brady looks good. They're arguably the best defense in the NFL. I looked into betting on them to win the Super Bowl last week, but they were already down to 7-1. So yeah, this looks like one of the best teams in football. Ronald Jones, you know, I was hyping last week, drops one pass, then he's benched for two quarters. Unbelievable, man. Fournette, by the way, nearly turned a little drop off into an interception, but he did secure it, and then he secured all the others. So it looks like he's totally the passing down back there and gonna cannibalize each other. But that was funny. Ronald Jones drops one pass and then he's benched for two quarters right after I go nuts about him. But it's yeah, they'll be fine even without Godwin. Has to miss a couple weeks. At least it's a broke, you know, it's a finger injury. It's not some hamstring. So he'll be back in a couple weeks. And if this team gets healthy, wow. Interesting about Bruce Arians. I guess he didn't have a great experience with Antonio Brown in Pittsburgh, and said no way before the season to Brady, who just obviously fell in love with his one game experience with Brown in New England. And Brady said, well, what about, you know, when he comes off, if he's available after the suspension, if our receiving corps is banged up? And apparently that's exactly what happened, and here we are. So yeah, this Bucs team, very smart decision by Brady, by the way. He's on a Bucs team that's a Super Bowl favorite, and New England is officially, you know, they've peaked. They're in the downswing there. So bravo to Brady, man. Props.
Yeah, they're lost in the wilderness, I think the Patriots are. We could say that. Did you see Bruce Arians? I mean, look, Bruce Arians, like, openly admits that he lies to the media and, like, he feels like it's part of the game to sort of play that stuff. So, like, take all of this with a giant, big, fat grain of salt. I mean, this Antonio Brown situation is a perfect, perfect, like, note of that. He said that Brady had nothing to do with bringing Brown in. BS, man. No, yeah. I don't buy that for a second. But yeah, Bruce Arians basically said Leonard Fournette is now his, quote, nickel running back. He's playing in hurry up and obvious passing down situations. He basically took that role from LeSean McCoy. Hilarious that we've got Leonard Fournette playing the role of James White in the Brady offense. But I think this is going to be, like, obviously I think you could say, okay, Mike Evans is back in, you know, starting consideration because Godwin is out. But I wouldn't be so sure because basically of what you and I have just been talking about, like, this Bucs team, they can beat you in so many different ways. Like, I think it's going to be, you know, almost like a Patriots type of situation where you have no idea what their game plan is going to be going into each specific week. I mean, again, they can get into a slug it out, you know, defensive heavy contest because they have one of the best front sevens and an aggressive secondary that plays off those blitz packages from Todd Bowles really well. Their running game, you just said it, like Ronald Jones, 330 yards over three games without Fournette, comes in, makes one mistake. And yeah, Jones scored a touchdown last week, but obviously was not that feature back anymore. The running backs could go a couple different ways. Once Brown is involved in this passing game, like Scotty Miller is a guy who can make plays. Like Gronk is back. Chris Godwin eventually will be back. Mike Evans is out there as well. Like they could go any different direction for the pass game. Like this game on Monday night against the Giants this week, I have no idea how to project the Bucs in this spot because I think they could beat the Giants on the ground. I think they could beat the Giants through the air. I think they could, you know, their defense could throttle New York and like the Giants could put up 3 points, and just we're not even talking about the offense. So I think that's the situation we're going to have to deal with the Bucs every single week because they're that good of a team.
Yeah, I know it doesn't always work perfectly with volume this way, but it is tough to rely on, you know, entering the year ranking all these guys high, Godwin, Evans, and Gronk, on a defense that's allowing the fewest yards per play on the other end. I mean, I guess it results in a lot of possessions, but man, yeah, that team can beat you in different ways with the healthy running back situation now too. Evans could just be like their goal line receiver and get to the touchdowns, but he's also not a great fit for Brady, who wants to get rid of the ball quick and he does not want to get hit. You know, Evans more downfield, so at least a healthy one. So, yeah, even without Godwin, you're right. With Gronk emerging and Scotty Miller there in the running game and the defense, and, I mean, how many touchdowns can – Daniel Jones went 5 weeks without scoring a touchdown. Is he going to score one against the Bucs? So, yeah, no, it's not an ideal setup. But no Godwin, you got to bump Evans up a little.
Right. I think that's the takeaway. You got to bump him up a little, but I think we're both saying – maybe hold off on bumping him up too far. This is a good podcast for JJ Zacharyson, because I also saw him put up a poll when he was talking about Mike Evans. Well, who would you rather have for the rest of the season, Mike Evans or Eagles breakout receiver Travis Fulgham? And obviously his followers are sharp. About two-thirds of them said Travis Fulgham. They'd rather have Fulgham for the rest of the year. And I get it. Right? Because if you just look from, like, take the names out of it, from a resume and on paper perspective from 2020, Fulgham has clearly been the better of the two in fantasy. Right now, over the last four games, he's averaging 9.3 targets. That's 12th in the NFL behind Robbie Anderson. It's in front of DeAndre Hopkins in terms of 89.3 yards a game, 3 touchdowns. How much of this do you think is just like, it's a barren landscape in Philadelphia? Carson Wentz doesn't have anyone to throw to. Or do you think Fulgham might actually be good? I'll give a spoiler to my take here. I think Fulgham might actually be pretty good.
I think it's both. I think he looks really good. He passes the eye test. And he happens to be on a team that lost Miles Sanders, all their wide receivers, and both their tight ends. So it's like it's a nice confluence of events to him to be immediately a top 15 type fantasy wide receiver. I mean, it's happened before. Miles Austin or some of these guys come out of nowhere at the wide receiver position. It's less, it's more unusual than running back, but it happens. And yeah, I'm with you. I think he looks really good, and he's in a pretty good situation too.
He kind of reminds me, I feel like he's on the Marvin Jones, Darius Slayton axis of receiver, where they play a lot outside. I wouldn't call any of them elite separators by any means, but they're really good at winning contested situations. And when they're matched with a quarterback that has no problem rifling that ball downfield into tight coverage, like Carson Wentz does right now, I mean, basically, Travis Fulgham has just become what Alshon Jeffrey used to be, that boundary receiver that's good in 50-50 situations. And, you know, I mean, he's crushing it in this role. I think he's legit. I don't think he's going anywhere. Jalen Reagor is going to come back soon. Like, I think if they can get Fulgham and Reagor on the field together, and then a potentially Dallas Goedert at some point soon as well, like, the Eagles might actually have something there from an offensive perspective, and they'll consistently have offensive line problems. I think Wentz has been under pressure on more of his dropbacks than any other quarterback this year. But now we're starting to cook there with that personnel grouping. And Wentz right now is QB7, I think, on the year in fantasy, mostly on the back of 5 rushing touchdowns. But I feel like there's still a little bit of, like, national stink on Carson Wentz because he's been so bad from a turnover perspective this year. But this might be a chance, like, he's starting to play a little bit better. We're kind of just starting to understand, like, what Wentz is going to be this year. This might be a good time to start buying guys like Fulgham if people think, like, the point, I think, from JJ's poll there with Mike Evans being, you know, favored by only 1/3, but that is 1/3 of people that favoring Mike Evans in that poll simply because of name value. If people don't really have a good understanding of what Fulgham is doing, or Jalen Reagor is available on your waiver wire, or Dallas Goedert could be had on the cheap in a trade, maybe even Miles Sanders at some point too when he gets healthy, I feel like all these Eagles guys, like, kind of sneaky might be a buy right now.
Yeah, Wentz, unlike Brady, is totally not afraid to get hit. He stays in there. He's willing to. Not that Brady's afraid
too
to,
willing.
But Wentz
sometimes
doesn't mind
too,
to.
I think Wentz is too yeah. willing sometimes.
Right, he doesn't care. As well. Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. Just like reckless in there. And that results in all these downfield shots. I mean, John Hightower was like second in air yards a couple weeks ago. I mean, all these right. bombs. And that'll help Fulgham. I mean, where the red zone? Both tight ends out and the running backs. Well, you mentioned Carson Wentz is running them all in. But DeSean Jackson just suffered a high ankle sprain. Yeah, Ortega Whiteside does not look to be a thing. So Travis Fulgham, I have ranked as a top 20 wide receiver. Maybe I should move him into top 15 in this matchup against Dallas. I mean, it's great. So totally with you here. Yeah, easily for me over Evans.
Yeah, this is a beautiful thing too, because they're playing Dallas this week. Like, we're talking about all these things clicking, and then they're playing Dallas this week. Like, this is a great right. spot, I think. I think even in that situation, like, Carson Wentz might go maybe underplayed in DFS simply because, again, there's still a good amount of like national stink on him and the NFC East, especially coming off that, just, I don't know how to describe it, Thursday night game against the New York Giants. All right, let's move. Last thing we love to see, sort of pseudo love to see this. It's your team, the San Francisco 49ers. Their committee backfield continues to produce if you can pick the right one. They're second in rushing offense DVOA right now. Jeff Wilson, what a bummer, man. I mean, this guy is like tearing it up against the Patriots. I added him to a bunch of leagues because it's like, okay, this could be like, I know everyone wants to add Hasty. I know everyone likes Jerick McKinnon, but like, this would be the 500th time in NFL history that a Shanahan back that isn't the one we expect to produce ends up producing, goes out there, plays really well, ends up getting hurt. It's a real bummer for him. But you know, could this be a situation where we start to get a couple of usable backs from this backfield, like Raheem Mostert? No one, he's on IR again. Is this sort of the breakout moment for Hasty, who I think in his touches has looked explosive? I feel like we talked about him on last week's show as well. Is this a spot where he could end up being a potential starter the rest of the time that he has the reins here?
You know, I had it half right last week. I had McKinnon ranked lower than most, and I kind of avoided him. He has just lacked burst ever since they worked him really hard, played him like 98% of the snaps. You know, back-to-back knee surgeries, he's just really lacked burst. Now, maybe this week off that they plan, maybe he'll suddenly regain some of that burst. But the other half I got wrong was I went Hasty last week and not Wilson. I mean, he had missed the week before with that calf injury. He was questionable. It was an afternoon game, so it was tough for fantasy managers. But Wilson's a legend, man. That's three multiple rushing touchdowns games he's had, and he's barely played the last 2 years. But and next man up for the Niners, and your guess is as good as mine between McKinnon and Hasty, but my guess would be McKinnon is more the third down guy, going to get the catches, but Hasty looks like the guy with more juice. He was a preseason favorite, so I would be starting Hasty over McKinnon, but it's probably going to delve into some sort of committee, and Seattle's not the best matchup. They're far better against the run than they are the pass, but yeah, it's a weird situation. They're down to like their fifth stringer. I mean, Tevin Coleman yeah. is possibly going to come back as well. So Mostert's yeah. awesome, can't stay healthy. Wilson looks really, really good when you get the opportunity. But now you're really getting thin with a banged up McKinnon and, you know, undrafted Hasty.
Yeah, I was going to mention, like, Raheem Mostert, Jeff Wilson, they're both on IR. So is Tevin Coleman, also on IR. But Kyle Shanahan said he could come back in week 8, further complicating an already complicated situation. But Coleman might be another guy to, like, go, like, check your waiver wire. I'm sure he's yes. available. Like, check your waiver wire. Pick up Tevin Coleman because, you know, obviously there's 1,000 different reasons why we could say that this coaching staff obviously really likes him. But, you know, we're talking about, like you said, last man standing here. If Hasty doesn't grab the reins and run with it in week 8, we could certainly be talking about Coleman here very soon. So maybe get ahead of the curve on that one if you have bench space. And you should have bench space right now, okay? You don't need to keep the, like, Danny Amendola's wide receiver 4 or 5s on your bench anymore if you're a good team. Start planning for this championship push here.
Debo's right, out, too, and he's like a glorified running back for them, too. He's getting yes, off these jet true. Sweeps. So, I mean, they really need someone to step up. Hasty looks good, man. I mean, Hasty is a sleeper for sure. Hasty has more upside than Coleman's corpse at this point. But I can't promise it. And, again, it might be McKinnon. But Hasty's the one with the upside. He's got some he hits that hole hard.
I would agree with you 100% on that one. All right, we wanted to thank once again our sponsor for this episode, Planters, when you want to satisfy a salty craving. Planters has you covered. Their deluxe mixed nuts are roasted to perfection and seasoned with sea salt, giving you the crunchy texture and enhanced flavor that you crave. Stay satisfied with Planters deluxe mixed nuts. All right, let's move on to trends you hate to see. If you're a Cam Newton backer, you know, as I am, you hate to see the last 2 weeks. What's going on here, man? He leads the NFL right now over the last 2 weeks with a 12.5% interception rate. That's absurdly high. He's 27th in catchable pass rate, and he's averaging just 5.3 air yards per completion. What's your guess as to what's going on with Cam Newton? Because I have about five.
Yes, I'm very curious your take here. I think it's just a combination of many things. One, that great game week two in Seattle doesn't look as amazing in hindsight when you look at Seattle's defense. It was still great. They're making tremendous throws. He dealt with COVID. One thing I want to bring up quickly is that I had Ben Baldwin on the pod and I grilled him about the CPOE, the advanced passing stats. And he basically said to me that the system matters more than I was giving it credit for. And I was burying Tom Brady. Maybe it was those numbers pointed a lot to that New England system here. And that's what Cam Newton is taking over. Meanwhile, Brady looks good again in a different system. So those advanced stats and all that, you know, context matters. And it maybe wasn't an individual look at that quarterback. Maybe you really should take it all into context with the system. So the New England one is suddenly maybe the one of the worst in the league. And it's hard to argue looking at those wide receivers. That said, he also, his mechanics are out of whack. He made some really bad throws. I'm a Niners guy, so I was watching that game and he just didn't look right either. So what's your opinion, Harmon? I'm guessing it's there are many things here.
Yeah, 1,000%. Like, context always matters behind, you know, advanced stats with anything. Of course, that goes without saying. I think, like you're saying, from an eye test perspective, he looks terrible. I mean, there's no like, well, his receivers aren't open, whatever. Like, there are open guys, sure. Cam doesn't look good. And I was listening to the Athletic Football Show with Robert Mays and Nate Tice. They do a great like Sunday night recap show. I'd recommend everybody check that out. Nate's a former college quarterback. His son was a son of Mike Tice, a former NFL coach too. He was talking about, you know, basically like sometimes when guys slip into bad mechanical habits, and there's no doubt that Cam has some bad mechanical habits pretty much throughout his entire career. But like, when you take a long absence, like when you take an absence from the game or whatever, that could be a huge part of like throwing him off rhythm. And, you know, whether like, I think it's sort of weird and irresponsible to speculate about whether like he has lingering effects from COVID or like, you know, whatever. I have no idea. Like, there's just nothing really I can say there with any definitive guess. But at the same point, at the same time, like what we can definitely say is that coming off week three, he takes this gigantic absence from the game, from the team, obviously 2 weeks. That's a long time. Also, it's worth noting, like, he's very new to this system. It's very easy to slip back into bad habits, and especially when you've been away from the game, then it could make it even worse. Like, the effects of these, the bad habits, and you see it, like, you know, he's short hopping some of these throws. Like, some of them, they're not even close. Like, when he misses, like, it's not even like the old Cam Newton, like, oh, he misses high, whatever. Like, it's not even close to that. It's way worse. So that's sort of like a good news, bad news thing, because I think the good news in that is that maybe he gets into rhythm and like in a couple of games, he's fine. I think that's totally possible. But I think the bad news is the last 2 weeks have really exposed the fact that like there's just no margin for error in this Patriots offense, which is pretty much like what you were saying with the system and the players in it, which were making Brady look so bad last week or last year. So, yeah, I mean, there's a chance that just this entire team is kind of too broken to fix. I mean, their offensive line, it was supposed to be the strength of the team, and that's been very banged up of late. And that's compounding with Cam's problems. And then the problems that are, you know, I mean, like, clearly Cam doesn't trust all of his players right now because he barely knows these guys. So there's a lot going on with Cam Newton. I think if you play in a one quarterback league and you've been riding Cam, like, you've got to drop him and move on. Like, if you have him in super flex, you could probably hold him and see what happens. But I think you can, like, the actionable takeaway here is, I think for now, just kind of wash your hands of this offense until we see it get back on track here.
Yeah, I respect that he's shown zero excuse, given zero excuses, and put it all on his shoulders. But for whatever the reason, yeah, it's not, you can't trust him in fantasy lineups for sure. And man, his receivers, you look at the tight ends top to bottom, it is pretty brutal. And it's not like Jared Stidham has looked any better at all.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, work either, exactly. So. That's why there's not going to be like a quarterback competition or anything like that, because Stidham's come in the last couple of games, and I mean, he's been better than Brian Hoyer, but like that ain't saying anything, man. Brian Hoyer is dust. So yeah, like Stidham's looked bad. And I think that also speaks to the situation that both these guys playing. And you're right, man. Like Cam gets such a bad rap for a thousand different things, and sometimes he's brought it on himself at different points of his career. But Cam is never a guy that's like going to make excuses or blame other people. Like, yeah, he's that dude. Let's talk about an offense that we didn't expect to have concerns about, but we sort of kind of do. We talked about the Chiefs earlier in the show. You know, Tyreek Hill, number one, definitely been a guy who has not been what people probably thought. He's like always going to be an efficiency outlier, but the volume is not what you paid for in fantasy this year. In 2018, he had 8.6 targets per game. 2019, 7.4. This year, down to 6.9. And I think what you really have to look at here is like the Chiefs offense from an efficiency perspective has not lost anything, right? Like they're still number one in offensive DVOA as a whole, and they're number one in terms of passing offense DVOA. But Mahomes right now has gone over 300 yards in three of his games, but in all others, he's thrown for fewer than 240. The Chiefs have only lost once this year. Like they've showed us, and I this sort of bleeds into what I wanted to talk about with the Ravens too. They've shown us that like when they're in control of a game, they're totally fine to just ride Clyde Edwards-Helaire and then probably Le'Veon Bell and a little bit of Darrell Williams. Like they've really leaned on that ground game in positive game script situations, which is really not what we expected coming into this year.
So Tyreek Hill had 10 targets last week. My go-to whopper combination of air yards and target share. He was fourth, so maybe he's creeping back up there. Ayuk, my guy, was fifth last week, by the way. Tyreek Hill, I'm treating him more like, say, in between the 8 and 15 wide receivers as opposed to 4 or 5 is what I would say, kind of how they're distributing it there here. But you love to be tied with Mahomes, and like I said last week, the opportunity was there. Will be interesting to see the Le'Veon Bell revenge game. What a, I mean, a 20-point spread in the NFL. They could spread it around there for Hill. I mean, the setup might not be great for him this week. But, yeah, it's been interesting with Mahomes not exactly lighting the league on fire. But last week was weird with the two, the defensive touchdowns and the special teams touchdown. Their plays just were way down because of that random event. So I still expect them to be fine moving forward. But, yeah, Tyreek Hill has not quite been the target hog as we expected. And Travis Kelce's already matched last year's touchdown total, I believe, too. So it's just gone a little bit differently. Although Hill is still scoring the touchdowns, too. And it's so nice and frustrating when you don't have any of them when Mahomes calls hike from the 3-yard line and you know, hands the ball off to Hill for an easy touchdown in front of him, and it counts as a pass. So he's still getting those every now and then, too.
Yeah, right. Like, that's what I'm saying. From an efficiency perspective, they've been fine. I think that both the Ravens and the Chiefs, I think, are really – and this might be something that we sort of have to account for in fantasy. Like, the Ravens, they have – I feel like might have talked about this at different points on the show, too, but who cares? We say the same things over and over again. It doesn't matter. Of course. You know, they're a team that clearly, like, they're laser focused on January, right? Like, the Ravens they don't have a damn thing to prove in September, October, whatever. Like, we might not see the best of the Ravens until late into December. Like, that's when they might start fully clicking. I'm not saying that they're not trying, right? Same thing with the Chiefs. I'm not saying that they're, like, not trying to win. But what's the incentive for a team? And like the Ravens have only lost one game too, to the Chiefs. Like through all their offensive struggles, they're still winning, and winning is all that matters to them. They don't care about their fantasy stats or whatever. So what incentive do they have to really unveil any new wrinkles? Same thing with the Chiefs. Like, why bother? Like, I thought it was interesting. I started doing my rankings this week, and in the consensus rankings that you can start out with, like, Tyreek Hill is wide receiver two. Patrick Mahomes is quarterback one. I just said, like, in games, like, in all other games outside of three this year, Mahomes has gone under 240 yards. Like, sure, he could come out and throw 200 yards and throw five touchdowns on the Jets. I think that's quite possible. But it's also possible that he comes out and throws 220, gets one touchdown, then they just ride Le'Veon Bell for the revenge game for the rest of the week. Like, we might have to sort of start baking that into some of these very, like, maybe two or three teams every year in very unique circumstances that are really only focused on one goal, winning the Super Bowl, because that's basically all the Ravens have left to prove, winning the playoffs, whatever. Like, they don't have a lot of incentive to, even at this point in the season, start unveiling all of these new things, like, or even really be the best version of themselves.
Yeah, it seems like the Chiefs hid some stuff before that game, specifically against the Ravens. They have the Chiefs have the number 5 pass defense in DVOA. So, I mean, their defense is pretty good, too, with the running game going. So,
yeah. Yes,
it's not quite the carnival stats. And then, of course, Mecole Hardman somehow leads a team in receiving last week on just 2 targets. And I expected DeMarcus Robinson to be a sneaky flex play. So, yeah, they're loaded there in KC. And Tyreek Hill is more of a wide receiver 10 than a wide receiver 2 is what I would say.
I love it. All right, let's do a quick breakdown of the Cleveland offense without Odell Beckham, on top of already not having Nick Chubb. I talked about this on Twitter this morning. In a year where pretty much all holidays are canceled, is anyone trick-or-treating this year? Can we have big Thanksgiving, Christmas gatherings? I don't know. What a terrible year. In a year where all of the holidays are canceled, it's nice that we can have our annual tradition of, when I tell you Rashard Higgins is a must add on the waiver wire. Like, it's nice that that annual tradition can still be a thing when all of our other holidays are canceled. How do you feel about this offense now without Beckham in the mix?
It's crazy. Looked like he was going to be benched for Keenum after a slow start and a horrific week before. And then Mayfield looked great. I hate to be anecdotal and be like, is he going to be better without Beckham, whom I think is absolutely, you know, awesome talent, one of the best receivers. But you cut back a couple weeks ago, he had to go apologize to him after they scored a touchdown and said, remain patient. And sometimes it does work that way as far as feeling the need to feed your alpha receiver versus spreading it around. It's a tough task with Hooper hurt also, and Jarvis Landry playing with a broken rib and no Chubb, as you said, but Harrison Bryant looks like a player, and Rashard Higgins, I'm with you, man. Add him for sure. I think I have him ranked pretty top, borderline top 30 in this matchup at home against the Raiders, top 30-ish wide receiver this week. So yeah, add Higgins, and sucks for Beckham, but I don't know. I'm very curious your take here. Mayfield I've been down on, but that was very impressive last week.
Yeah, no, I mean, Beckham, I think, is still, like, he looked, I should say, right back, you know, to sort of his old form, like getting separation at all levels of the field. But the chemistry between him and Baker has never really been there. And I think it goes beyond an anecdotal thing, because, you know, one thing that I've looked at studying receivers for the last, you know, 6-7 years, like I have, you start to learn a lot about quarterbacks and what type of receivers quarterbacks prefer. And I remember the first time I thought about this, I might've talked about this on the Sunday show, it's hard to say. The first time I started thinking about this was with Colin Kaepernick in San Francisco. You know, Kaepernick was very much like a see it, throw it type of quarterback by the time, you know, 2015 came around, 2014, like, and he had sort of started to go on the downward turn of his career from the Super Bowl appearance a couple of years before that. So you could see that he really could not make it work with a timing rhythm route runner like a Michael Crabtree. But with Anquan Boldin, there was no problems there because Boldin is the ultimate see it, throw it. Like, wherever he is, you can just throw it to him because he doesn't have to be open. You know, he can win those contested passes. I think Jarvis Landry is a pretty similar player to an Anquan Boldin in his prime, which is why I think Baker is a similar passer, a see it, throw it type of guy. Doesn't anticipate things well, awful at going through his reads. That's a terrible fit for a guy like Odell Beckham, who we think of him for all the supreme athleticism, but he is very much a timing rhythm route runner as well. You think about on the curls, the comebacks, whatever, the dig routes over the middle of the field, those require a lot of timing rhythm, of which Baker has none. So I'm not surprised that this connection, you know, in hindsight, didn't ever really come together because Baker has sort of regressed to being that type of player. But without Beckham in the mix and without the pressure to make it work with a guy that you just can't find that rhythm because your skill sets don't align, I wouldn't be surprised if we see a better version of Beckham, you know, with a guy like Rashard Higgins, who he's always had a good rhythm with, or Landry when he gets healthy, because that makes just sense from an on-field perspective that those guys match up better. So that's kind of like my thoughts on why this connection hasn't really worked. And I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Beckham, you know, is on another team next year or whatever, because it just hasn't really been, it's been about as bad as it could be. It's been as bad, about as bad as it could be from his Browns tenure to this point.
Yeah, I believe entering last week, Mayfield held the ball longer than any other quarterback. He's speaking of not being afraid to take hits, not great as far as timing, but it's too bad it didn't work out. Entering last year, I had Beckham ranked super high, Mayfield ranked super high. I expected them to be awesome, take the league by storm, freed from that giant situation. But here we are, and it's not ideal. But Mayfield, yeah, very curious to see how he performs moving on. Matt, before, I know we're running late on time here, but I just wanted to say one more stat here. Is your guy, Justin Herbert, did you see that they started throwing the ball a lot more and they became super aggressive? In the first three quarters on early downs, they started passing it nearly 60%. Pretty big stat trend, and I know you love Herbert, who doesn't. So that's something I wanted to mention. Yes, I had to mention it with your
board. He's on the board this week, Justin Herbert. Yeah. I'm obsessed. I love it. That's a trend we love to see. I agree. That was, I mean, he does, who knows, right? Like, Herbert could at some point just flip the switch and, like, it, you know, it was just a flash in the pan to start his career. You know, people get more tape on him, whatever. Like, that could be a thing that happens. But good God, man, like, everything you want from a quarterback, he has it. You know, it's the rhythm, it's the feel, it's the placement, it's the aggression, it's the poise under pressure. Like, I mean, I can't say enough good about where he is. Like, at this point too, like, Chargers players, I know Keenan Allen has been on a tear, but in fantasy, like, we always talk about buying low, but sometimes you got to buy high. I think the best could be yet to come for Keenan Allen. You know, Mike Williams will always be a little volatile because one of Herbert's best traits, but it's one of the most aggravating for fantasy, is that he can make it work with absolutely everybody. So yeah, listen, we could go overtime all we want, Dalton, to give a little
But it's amazing. No, you're right. He's hitting up Guyton. He's hitting up his fourth reads. And for fantasy, the legs, he can run too. So it's an advantage there. And man, just so impressive. And if they do start passing more, like I said, 59% in the first three quarters on early downs, that's 5% more than league average. That's big news too. So yeah, man, we're part of the Justin Herbert fan club here.
Yeah, listen, we could have spent the last 45 minutes talking about only Justin Herbert, and I think I would have been fine with it. But let's wrap things up with our last segment of the show, Who Got Shelled, presented by our friends at Planters. Every Wednesday, Dalton and I are going to look back at a defense or defensive player who got absolutely shelled last week. Then we'll dive into the data and point out the defensive matchups that you might want to take advantage of this Sunday. Dalton, who got shelled last week? This one's easy. The Seattle Seahawks defense. Producer Ragu has banned Dallas from being in this section both last week and I think projecting forward, because it's simply too easy. But the Seahawks might be, like, close to that territory too. Kyler Murray was awesome. Did you see Kyler Murray literally, like, smile and then unleash the deep pass to DeAndre Hopkins on the touchdown? What a baller. Like, one of the coolest things I've ever seen. That was awesome. But yeah, Dallas, Seattle, what's the difference at this point? Seattle got absolutely shelled last week.
They did. And, you know, I'll keep with the theme here. I think that game, the Niners and Seahawks game this week, is where I'm talking about who's going to get shelled. I'll just say my 49ers, but it's really going to be both. I like loading up both teams here in DFS. By the way, can we say that my 49ers would be the clear best team in the NFL if healthy right now? A bunch of frauds out there. They're making these wins with 10 people injured here. I think they have about two starters on defense. One quick fact, Jimmy G had the second lowest ADOT last week and the highest YPA. But all those injuries on defense are going to catch up to him. This is a bad setup. I know the Seahawks just played five quarters, but they're fired up after losing that overtime game. A depleted Niners team against this Seahawks team that is getting the most yards per play on offense and allowing the fourth most on defense. That's such a nice setup for fantasy stats. So I think both the Seahawks and specifically my 49ers, all those injuries are going to catch up to them. And this Seahawks offense is just going to absolutely shell them, unfortunately.
Your guy Jimmy G over the last 2 weeks averaging 3.2 air yards per completion. That is dead last in the NFL. And, you know, hey, at least he's up there from an on-target throw percentage. He's second in the NFL to only
Debo minus 45 air yards, I believe, the last 2 weeks, too. Debo minus 45 air yards.
It's insane. Talk about, like, the biggest training wheels offense in the entire NFL. It's good to play quarterback for Kyle Shanahan. All right, I expect to get shelled this week is the Minnesota Vikings. Vikings are coming off a bye. They face Aaron Rodgers again, who absolutely shelled them in week one. He sort of started this revenge comeback tour MVP-ish run against the Vikings with four touchdowns and over 360 yards in week one. Would not be surprised if we see a similar situation. I got to tell you, man, I love the way they're using Davante Adams. Davante Adams almost tied his own catch record last week, a record that he set in week one in terms of the most catches in franchise history for the damn Packers. You love to see it. The Vikings right now still allow the seventh highest yards per play. And I think actually this game could be, in terms of net yards per attempt, their seventh or third highest allowed in the NFL. Like, I think in terms of a game script perspective too, like, the fact that the Vikings offense with Justin Jefferson in place is actually a much better unit than they were in week one, I think that could only incentivize more offensive production in this game. So I think Vikings Packers should be pretty high scoring, and I think the Vikings are going to get absolutely shelled by Aaron Rodgers, who, when he doesn't play the best team in the league in the damn Bucks, he's on fire this year.
I was going to say, how good is the Bucs defense in hindsight? Oh, this should absolutely be a fun game. These two teams are both top four in yards per play. Dude, I ranked Davante Adams number one receiver last week, but I hyped MVS as a sleeper and faded Adams in DFS because of Bradley Roby, who leaves after the first snap. I'm not saying he's some shutdown corner, but Bradley Roby leaves after the first snap, and then they don't double Adams the rest of the game. It's a ridiculous setup. I mean, just I guess the coaching's still a problem there in Houston. But that's a fun one, too, for sure. Minnesota's D will get shelled this week. I agree.
Yeah, pretty much it was one of those weeks where, like, no Adams, no money in terms of DFS. Yeah, like, mm-hmm. Adams is the baller. I think he's best receiver in the NFL right now, but that's a whole separate discussion. All right, so that was who got shelled. I hope we don't get shelled by making those picks. I tend to doubt it on some of these guys. And once again, we wanted to give a shout-out to Planters for that segment. Stay satisfied with Planters. All right, Dalton, plug your stuff. What you got coming up this week, man?
I got a pod with P&L, my sit start Friday. Just follow me on Twitter, and yeah.
Follow Dalton on Twitter. So follow Dalton on Twitter. I was telling my fiance this week about how I told you to tweet more of your hot takes, and then the one time you did tweet, you know, you got banged on the Andy Dalton analysis, and now basically I told her I'm responsible for, you know, single-handedly, like, shutting down you ever tweeting again, which, tough scene for me.
Yeah, that's right. No, I will. I'll get back on the horse. I'll be tweeting tonight my tears, crying. I have a big Rays future, and they're going to lose the World Series tonight. So when you hear this, I will be very, very, very sad. But yeah, I will be tweeting sadness tonight.
Well, we love tweeting sadness. And while you're, you know, desperately scrolling through Dalton's Twitter feed looking for that sadness, you can keep yourself entertained by listening to some of our great podcasts here at Yahoo Sports. Check out the NFL podcast with Charles Robinson and Therese Paylor, and the Yahoo Sports College podcast with Dan Wetzel, Pete Thamel, and Pat Forty, our friend from SI. Follow us on Twitter at Yahoo Fantasy. I'm at Matt Harmon _BYB. That's at Dalton Del Don for all of your sad tweets. And one more thanks to our friends at Planters. You will not be sad if you're enjoying some Planters products. And tomorrow, Dalton's going to be back with Scott to preview the Week 8 betting lines, as he mentioned. But until then, we're out of here.